God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Mark Latham. Mark Latham joins me each and every Thursday afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Frank. Always good to be with you.
Mark, let's start and talk about, I suppose, Alan Joyce. It was a shock this week, early in the week. All of a sudden, Alan Joyce was supposed to be staying as head of Qantas until November, but I think he sort of buckled under pressure, tendered the resignation and left almost exactly the same day. I see there's a story today saying a Senate inquiry is going to ask the Qantas boss, who is now Vanessa Hudson, and her predecessor, Mr. Alan Joyce, to reveal their talks with federal ministers after this storm in Parliament over the lobbying behind a decision that shielded the company from greater competition. This story today in particular is just not going away.
No, unfortunately, Qantas has had a tsunami of bad publicity. It's a great shame because in years gone by, it's been a national icon, the flying kangaroo that we've all loved. But you've got to say, Alan Joyce, he might have turned some profits in recent years, but he's made the organisation very political. They've embraced every woke cause under the sun. There's this suggestion he's got very close to the Albanese government as part of a deal by which the Transport Minister has locked Qatar Airlines out of more flights into Australia, giving Australians access to cheap airfares around the world. I think that's a terrible decision. We should have as much competition and lowest prices as possible, particularly after COVID. But also the ACCC is now investigating and looks like prosecuting Qantas for the sale of phantom tickets. That flights that have been cancelled, they were still selling tickets, which is a terrible practice for consumers. So on many, many fronts, Alan Joyce was facing the worst possible publicity. He was going anyway, and he fell on his sword that very day. So I think most people would think, given the bad turn that Qantas has had, a change of leadership is a good thing, and hopefully they can get back to being a national icon.
What's your thoughts on the situation that everyone's talking about today? And Catherine King, she was at a press conference today. She was dodging questions. I mean, she wouldn't reveal what the other factors were in reference to the decision. There's a question mark about the timeline. Did the Prime Minister know or didn't the Prime Minister know that the decision had been made in reference to Qatar Airlines? And the Prime Minister has come out in recent days and basically said he didn't know, he was overseas. It seems unreal that the Prime Minister wasn't across all of these details.
That does seem unusual, but then again, this is the guy who didn't read the full Voice Uluru statement document before he put us to a very expensive and wasteful referendum, so Albanese is not really a detailed guy. But Catherine King has got herself into a muddle in that months ago she said that an incident at Doha Airport 3 years ago where some Australian women were body searched and objected to it, that played no part in the decision to lock out Qatar Airlines in Australia. Now she's saying it was a factor in the decision. How much of a factor, we don't really know. But if the minister can't get her lines right, it does raise a suspicion as to what this was really about. I'm not too sure that whatever happened there at Doha Airport, which is a matter, I assume, for the local customs in the body searching of the Australian women, that's not a direct responsibility of Qatar Airlines. So why they're paying the price, I don't know. Have diplomatic objections been lodged with the Qatari government? We don't know. It's a real mess, isn't it? And Catherine King is all over the shop under questioning in the House of Representatives.
There was a story today that I think it was in the Telegraph in reference to that particular situation, and there was the five women are suing. They're actually suing Qatar Airways for compensation over this strip search. And so far, Qatar Airways basically have dismissed the responses, and I believe that Qatar Airways has now filed a strike out application in an effort to try to make the case go away completely.
Yeah, well, that's a legal matter for them. I don't know why the airline is responsible for the customs practice of a strip search. It's not an airline that does that. So it sounds complicated, sounds unusual. The Australian women have got a grievance that's taken them into legal action. We'll have to see how that plays out. But the main thing is that Catherine King said that it wasn't a factor. Now it is a factor, and she's not looking very competent in that portfolio.
Well, look, let's not gild the lily here. She's looking like a liar.
Well, she's changed her lines, and she's changed her story under pressure, which is a bad thing in politics. Most Australians wouldn't know a lot about Catherine King. She was in the Parliament when I was there. She's a long-serving Victorian MP. I'm not too sure a senior portfolio like Transport was at her level of ability, but they put her there, and under pressure, she's floundering.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about Eraring Power Station. It was going to close, and it's been announced this week that it's going to remain open till at least 2027. Who's going to foot the bill? I imagine it's going to be a New South Wales taxpayer.
Well, it's the price of keeping the lights on. I mean, Brent, we talked about a mess with Catherine King. There's a bigger mess in New South Wales, and that's energy policy. I was part of a parliamentary committee hearing yesterday where these much-touted renewable energy zones in the west of New South Wales, they won't be operational before 2028. So the much-touted transition to a clean energy economy, keep the lights on, nothing's really happening on that front. They haven't got the easements, the housing for the workers, they haven't got skills. There are worker shortages to actually build these renewable energy zones. And it goes back to when Matt Keane put through his electricity roadmap 3 years ago. From a standing start, he basically said within a decade, we're going to rebuild the entire New South Wales power grid. Well, it's not possible to do it in a decade. It would take several decades, maybe 30 or 40 years to do it properly and keep the lights on. The other problem is you can have all the renewables in the world, but when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing, what's the backup power to keep the lights on? There's no pumped hydro happening other than the disaster of Snowy 2.0. The gas peaking plants are over time. They're running behind schedule. Batteries aren't the solution. The Waratah battery they're doing at Eraring lasts for 2 hours. So there's no choice. There is no alternative but to keep Eraring going beyond the slated closure date of 2025. Keane should never have put that company under pressure to bring the closure forward to that date. In fact, looking back, the asset should never have been privatised by the New South Wales government, because now we've got to spend money, taxpayers' money, for something that was previously owned by the taxpayers to keep it operational, just to keep the lights on and have a functioning society and economy. So it's a real disaster, mainly of the making of Matt Keane. But let's not forget, in the New South Wales Parliament, Labor voted 85 times for the Keane plan. So they're responsible as well.
Well, both sides of politics are. I'm just amazed, though, that Keane was, you know, trying to send us broke when he was in power, and now he's in opposition. He's still continuing to try to send us broke with comments that he made earlier this week.
Well, yeah, he's responsible for this and can't shirk that. I've got to say that in the Parliament, in a lengthy debate, I said two things would happen because of his rushed 100% renewables plan. One was that the coal-fired power stations would close early, and sadly that was announced by Eraring, and the second thing was they wouldn't have the backup power, the firming capacity in place. I mean, other than Tasmania, Australia is the flattest and driest continent on Earth, so why would pumped hydro ever be a goer? And you've only got to look at Snowy 2.0, that enormous, expensive white elephant, to know that it's not coming online, it's not going to save the day, it's not going to keep the lights on. Everything is delayed, everything's over budget. It was a plan that was never feasible. At the committee yesterday, we heard that the mob that's administering these renewable energy zones, Energy Co, started with no staff. He empowered an organisation with no staff, and they had trouble filling positions, obviously, during COVID, to do this monumental task of rebuilding the power grid in New South Wales. It was never feasible, and Matt Keane, for these green ideological reasons, has put New South Wales on the cusp of economic and social disaster through blackouts.
Andrew says on the email, can you ask Mark Latham, when you talk to him today, about small nuclear module, as in reference to these small nuclear power plants? Does Mark Latham feel the moratorium is going to be lifted so that we'll be able to move down this road for nuclear power?
Well, I tried to in the last Parliament. I had a bill to lift the ban on nuclear power and uranium mining in New South Wales. And the Liberals, the Nationals, the Greens and the Labor Party, this woke coalition that believes in renewables and renewables alone, voted against it. We needed nuclear power in New South Wales and the rest of the country 10, 20 years ago. and we wouldn't have any of these problems now, because, Brent, you don't need to be Einstein to know that the only feasible way of keeping the lights on is reliable baseload power. Nuclear does that, and it's carbon-free. So why did the Greenies ever object to it when it was the logical solution? We've still got the ban in New South Wales, we've still got the ban in Canberra, and unfortunately no time soon will those be lifted.
So if you and I are still here in 10 years, 15 years talking to each other, do you think we'll still be asking that question about the moratorium?
Yeah, probably. It's been going on. The ban in New South Wales started in 1986, so what's that, 37 years it's been going, and it's one of the most disastrous policy consequences we've got. If you're going to get rid of coal, nuclear was the logical solution. And the thing about these small modular reactors, they're inherently safe, they're flexible, they're new dynamic technology, and you can plug them in where the coal-fired power stations had been. You don't have to spend billions rewiring the nation, building new transmission corridors out to the western part of New South Wales for wind and solar. You just keep them on the coast near the water, and they're safe, and they keep the lights on.
New South Wales is going to increase coal royalties for the first time in more than a decade, as it is looking to repair the state's budget. But the move has drawn an angry response from the fossil fuel industry. It claims it'll hurt companies already doing it tough from lower prices and increased costs, Mark.
Well, it breaks a Labor election promise not to increase taxes, but it also shows that coal's here to stay. Coal in recent years has had world record prices. It's lucrative. It's in the ground. It's exported out of Australia. It's part of the financial bonanza in Canberra and Macquarie Street, and they're extending that to garner an extra, I think it's $2.8 billion over the next 4 years in royalties. So, you know, coal is here to stay. It's ironical, isn't it? They all talk about renewables, but when they're looking for revenue, they go to reliable coal to try and raise the extra money. It will hurt the companies. It will push up prices, of course, as it's passed on to consumers, including electricity consumers. But the budget in New South Wales is desperate. It's deeply in debt and deficit. And the Treasurer, Daniel Mookey, is obviously trying to get some revenue in place to try and balance the thing.
Mookie said in the lead-up to the election, no more taxes. You just repeated that, no more new taxes, no more new taxes. This is one, there's another one. It was talked about today. Developers are now going to have to pay an extra $10,000 per unit if you're building, if you're a developer and you're building in Sydney, Central Coast, Hunter and the Illawarra. If you're building a new strata complex, as in blocks of units under strata, developers are going to be charged $10,000 per unit. So if there's 50 units, multiply 10,000 by 50. And according to the planning minister, this is not a new tax, this is a contribution.
Well, what it is another blow to housing affordability. Wasn't Chris Minns and his ministers all talking about the need to deal with the housing affordability crisis, particularly in rental, get new stock? Well, if they're going to be charged more housing investment in New South Wales will go to Queensland and other states. So I just don't see the point in slugging developers, knowing that it's passed on to unit purchasers, home buyers, renters. We all suffer from this. And again, the prospects of young Australians getting into housing ownership are very much diminished by this grab for money. So it is the equivalent of a tax. It's a tax on home ownership. And another blow to what we really need in New South Wales, extra housing supply, extra stock, units and detached housing, so that people can find something affordable. As the supply goes up, of course, the prices go down.
We're talking to Mark Latham this afternoon. Mark, new graduate teachers, it was announced this week in New South Wales, are set to earn $85,000 a year. That's a lot of money for a teacher just out of university, with the government and teachers' unions shaking hands on a massive one-year wage increase to flow straight into public and private school staff's pockets.
Yeah, on average, it's a $10,000 pay increase for teachers. And I think teachers in New South Wales have been underpaid, but I don't think it needed to be across the board. The main problem, Brent, has been that the starting pay for teachers in New South Wales is competitive against other professions. But after they've been there for 5 years or more, they lose that competitiveness. So I would rather have seen the increased salaries targeted for teachers who get 5 years plus. And also, I think it would have been valuable, very valuable, to have pay increases linked to performance. New South Wales has had the fastest falling school academic results in the world, and it's a truism to say, well, if the kids aren't learning, the teachers aren't teaching successfully. We need to measure performance in the classroom, value added. You know, if your class last year did the key tests and got 70%, after 12 months with the teacher they're on 85%, then obviously you deserve a big performance bonus for that wonderful achievement. So I think pay increases should be linked to performance. And if we don't do that, then you've got no idea who's a good teacher, who's a bad teacher, who are the kids who are suffering, why are the results going backwards?
Craig on the email says, could you ask Mark Latham, the poor teaching standards in primary schools in some regard is disgusting. Craig says, my son's teacher is so lazy. Parents from his class are moving to other schools, but no one at the school cares.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Performance matters. And if you're an underperforming teacher, then the lack of measurement of what you're doing and the lack of taking those complaints seriously is obviously your best friend. You can just continue to be lazy, ineffective, unsuccessful. You collect your pay increase under the Minns government, but the kids are suffering as their results go backwards. So performance pay is essential. It should have been in place under the last government. You know, Perrottet talked about it but did nothing. It's the key to lifting results in New South Wales if you're throwing around a big pay increase. But can I say in that regard, Brent, the other thing that's happened is that the Minister, Prue Carr, has abolished teacher accreditation system, that every 5 years you need to be accredited by your principal to say this person's teaching at a decent standard, deserves to be in a classroom. And that's also taking away the observation of classroom practice. Your listener, who basically is saying, I don't know enough about what's happening in the classroom, we need more independent observers and experts, mentors, to observe what teachers are doing in the classroom. If they're teaching the wrong way, fix it up, give them on-the-job training so they're more effective for the students.
Okay, I just wanted to touch on something that was a story yesterday that we took lots of phone calls and emails about. This is the Mosman locals and the Balmoral Beach and the Crown Land and the application by the Aboriginal Land Council to basically take over this Crown Land at Balmoral Beach. We found out yesterday in New South Wales there are 40,000 of these Crown Land claims outstanding. Mark, what's going on? This is just unbelievable. 40,000 of these claims on Crown Land by the Aboriginal Land Councils across New South Wales.
Well, you can be guaranteed the big majority of the 40,000 are as crazy as the idea that they're going to hand over Balmoral Beach to the local Indigenous group. The land rights in New South Wales have been around for 40 years. And obviously early in that process, most of the genuine claims were assessed and granted. What claims are there after 40 years? Well, just ridiculous ones, like the idea that Balmoral Beach needs to go to an Aboriginal Land Council. These things aren't going to happen. And another reason they're not going to happen is that we've had, 30 years of the Mabo legislation in Canberra, again, where land rights have been granted. So I think we're just now at the point where if there are 40,000 claims, 99% of them are in the category of absurd. They're not going to go anywhere, I assume. Although, you know, with the stuff about The Voice, who knows? It's a dangerous prospect to give people making ridiculous claims more power under the Constitution.
Speaking of The Voice, I see that Football League's finals are just around the corner. Well, they start on the weekend, don't they? But the grand finals are just around the corner, and Football League's have been warned to keep The Voice referendum politics out of it. I see that the AFL in Victoria have said they will, but that's not the case for the NRL, because the NRL have taken, what is it, $400,000 from the Yes campaign for advertising.
Well, there's a suggestion they're going to play the John Farnham ad before the game starts, so I just don't think this is advisable. People go to the footy to get away from things like politics, not to have it shoved down their throat as a distraction. They want to go and cheer for their team. Unfortunately, in the finals, your team, South, and mine, St George, aren't playing, Brent.
No, but, they're not.
For those going to cheer their teams, I hope it's totally free of politics. It's just about the footy. The games are good, and people are left to their own devices as to how they vote on the 14th of October. I don't think that ad is all that effective, and I think playing it at the footy will build resentment and actually be a negative for the Yes campaign. But you know, you say these things, but they're fanatical about it. Some sports administrators think they're quasi-politicians. Well, they should run at election time instead of spoiling the sporting event where people have paid their good money by running political ads.
I agree. All right, it's always a delight to catch up with you. I won't talk to you for a few weeks because, as you know, I'm having this damn operation next week, so I'm off for a while. I'm not too sure how long I'll be off, but we will return, and we'll return talking to you, Mark.
Look forward to it. All the best with your health improvement there, Brent. I'm sure you'll be 100% when you come back.
Thanks, mate. Nice to talk to you, Mark. Bye-bye.
Cheers.